Need a quick hit of Marketing Smarts inspiration? Here it is. We have lifted portions of our Marketing Smarts episodes for those of you who need a quick jolt of marketing savviness right now. Refer to the description for how to find a longer form version. And with that, here it is. All right, so our third insider tip a college athlete should know to better negotiate an NIL deal is to clarify usage rights and get the appropriate approvals from the team, university, and league. So in most cases, the only NIL you have access to is yours. And I'm going to ask Nick to clarify all this because I speak from the context of what I understand from professional sports, but I think it translates. But again, we're talking about the Wild West here, so there may be some rules or maybe not some rules. But what that means is if that you're doing a deal where your brand wants you to show up in your marks, whether it's your school's marks or your team's marks, that might require additional approvals, an additional deal. It's kind of like when you see all the Subway commercials and you see all of those athletes who are hawking Subway sandwiches and they're not in any of their marks. That's because Subway does not have a deal with any of those athletes' teams. Mm-hmm. They can't use those marks because they don't have a deal with that. So be very, very careful here in making sure, again, as you're negotiating with the brand, that you understand how they want you to show up and don't inadvertently agree to something that you haven't gotten the approvals for. And don't assume anything, okay? Now, again, there's tiers to this pricing as well, right? So the most common when you're talking about what kind of exposure you're going to have, and this comes to how you're going to use your NIL, is what we just talked about social posting and appearances. Now, this has some limited extended rights too, where a lot of the brands will want to repost that on their social or put it on their website. These are generally okay, right? So you could think about that in those terms. When they want to start using what they're doing now in terms of advertising, which has much broader exposure, that is generally a higher price tier. So that'd be like ads or billboards or collateral or something that's a little bit more fundamentally broader or bigger. So you also need here to be thinking about the length of time that's specified in the contract for usage of these things as well. Now, generally, when your contract is over, they need to stop using all of these things, right? So the only exception here is social. When something's out in social, something's out in social for eternity. There's nothing you can do about that. But for things that are on their website or TV ads or billboards or things that can come down, those things should come down. So Nick, what have you seen and how have you helped people understand what they need to do with regards to their usage rights?
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with the IP part of it, university IP. That's a mess still, I will be honest. So there's no specific answer that I could give to that question, but it depends on a school by school basis. Each school has a different policy that they have. And there's also restrictions in what types of brands you can and can't work with. So if I'm promoting
on the
university
side?
So if my university is, let's say, sponsored by Nike, probably cannot do a deal with Under Armour as an athlete. So that's also something to look out for. But when it comes to actually utilizing school marks in any sort of endorsement, that's a process that you have to go by on a school by school basis. And there's also some state laws that have that interpreted in there as well. Yeah, and that's something also the brands have to usually pay extra for when it comes to using IP. So that's very case by case. But on general usage rights of content, most of the deals we've done are social media. I think a big thing to call out is the type or the way that the brand is going to be using that content. So if they're going to be using it on their social media organically, or if they're going to do something like paid media with that content. Because if I'm a brand and I decide to, you know, just post it on my social media, that's different than me, the brand, putting, let's say, $1,000 behind that content and boosting it to thousands or millions of people. My content's not going to be in the eyes of way more people than I had originally thought. So athletes, if there is a paid media component, we've tried to kind of call that out to make sure athletes get paid for the amount of eyes that are actually going to see their content, not just the type of usage that they have in their contract.
Interesting. So you said most of this is socially led. I mean, I have an idea of why that is, but just why do you think that is such the focus, and or if it's paired with other things, what are those things typically?
Yeah, that's just those are the most of the deals that we've done. We just do a lot of social media campaigns with brands. We have done a good amount of like appearances and things like that. I'll give an example. We do a lot of work with this company called College Hunks hauling junk. They're all over the place. They've done tons of deals. They've probably sponsored at this point 15 to 20 different teams across the nation. And in each one of those scenarios, we had to go through the university to figure out if we could use their school marks for those sponsorships and how long they could, or College Hunks could post that on their website, how long they can post that on their social media, and if they were allowed to wear certain things to these basically appearances. So that's kind of an example of some of the nuances that we've had when dealing with some of these, I would say, both in-person and social campaigns.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you're hearing, again, the caution here of, it sounds like there is no standard. I think that's pretty fair to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, again, I mean, I feel like we've harked on the whole idea of doing your homework. And yeah. So this is another one where it's, you know, not making assumptions or thinking certain things are going to be possible, and making sure to cover your bases is really what I'm hearing throughout this, because I think mistakes can be costly, whether we're talking about the brand or the image or both, quite frankly, all, especially since there aren't standard practices out there for people to be looking to, at least to even have sort of like a barometer gauge of what to do. It sounds like it's really, honestly, you have to figure it out each time as if it's brand new.
Yeah, 100%. And I think time frame too is also really important here. I'll give the example of March Madness again. Let's say I sign a deal in January, and the brand has usage rights all the way to the, you know, like let's say May, and the brand doesn't really do much with the content until March Madness. And I'm now in March Madness, I'm performing really well. Then they start to utilize that content and boost it to tons of people, because everyone knows who I am now because I'm playing well. I wish that was the case. It's currently not myself. But so you just want to be careful in terms of the length of time that you're giving these usage rights to or for. Just so that you're not, you know, locking yourself into any long-term agreement and kind of hindering yourself from being able to monetize that, your brand, more at certain periods of time.
Yeah. In one question related to approvals, is it generally been your experience as the athlete's responsibility to get all the approvals from the university and their sport and whatever else they need to get, or is it the brand's or business's responsibility to get those?
Yeah, it depends on the kind of the scale of the campaign is what I've seen. If it's a one-off brand and they're sponsoring one athlete, a lot of the time the athlete will be in charge of that. But there's also scenarios in which I'm a brand and I'm sponsoring 20 different athletes across the country, and I'm going to get those approvals myself. There's also different organizations at some of these universities that handle that on behalf of athletes. Again, it's like it's a case-by-case thing when it comes to this whole IP scenario, but it's really about just doing your homework and figuring out what you're exactly allowed to do and what you can't do, and who's going to be in charge of getting that approval.
All right. So yeah, the moral of the story too is to ask the questions, right? So don't assume, and definitely don't agree to anything without checking first, for sure. Because it could get you in a whole world of trouble, litigation trouble that you do not need.
Absolutely.
All right, so our fourth insider tip a college athlete should know to better negotiate an NIL deal is to know your worth. And as we said before, this is another one that requires you to do research and seek the advice of people who know, like Nick. He's a good resource for all of you guys to really understand what the going rate for athletes are in different tiers. And so they could better guide you to really understand how you should really be benchmarking yourself. You can try to Google it. It is not a good idea. A lot of those are inflated, and a lot of those are pseudo, again, agents trying to pluck you and pull you and sell you a line about how they can help you, which is not actually really, really true. But know that pricing and how you price yourself is not going to be an easy thing, because it's a very big battle between what you think you're worth and what somebody's willing to pay. I mean, we say that all the time, like how much is a house worth? It's whatever somebody's willing to buy it for. So you have to kind of consider that. So I really suggest, and Nick, I'm going to ask you in a second what your thoughts are too on this, but I really suggest not to be too rigid, especially for your first few deals. You may need to take something initially less than what you think you're worth in order to get some traction. And then, as you said, like when things start hitting, like March Madness, if you were smart and savvy in negotiating your contract, you can start asking for more money as a result of doing that, right? So there's kind of an escalated level of value depending on how you start showing up in the world around you, right? So think about the fact that your primary goal here is not necessarily an in and out, but is to build relationships, because that's what's going to give you the ongoing revenue, okay? So you're going to want to exercise that, and you're going to want to be able to fuel that for as long as you possibly can in order to be able to get everything that you are worth. So here's a few tips here that you can specifically think about as you're thinking about how to negotiate yourself or somebody's negotiating on behalf of you. So you can definitely demand more when you're in season. So this has been our experience, or my experience specifically, with Olympic athletes. Olympic athletes, when they are gearing up for the Olympics, are worth astronomically more than when they're not. Okay, so make sure you take advantage of that. This is a time to seize what you're worth. Don't nickel and dime. Again, this is what I'm talking about. Think beyond just a short-term opportunity of being able to get that money in your pocket now. You should be trying to build relationships, unless you believe that your window of opportunity is so small that you have to get everything that you possibly can in that small window. That's generally not the case, but there are circumstances where that's the case. Invest a bit. Like what I said before, when I've been asked, how do I get endorsement deals? I said, show some love for some brands. Do that. Do that and do some extra things above and beyond your contract that don't dilute your worth, but that helps show goodwill. A big thing that athletes used to do for us is we used to do like a hi video to the organization. People eat that up. I mean, they just love to hear from these guys who are talking directly to them. So do something that could add a little bit of sizzle without it diluting what you would have actually made in order to kind of go do that, call it as part of your contract. And then realize that just because someone else is getting it doesn't mean you will. So this is the thing that was the hardest for a lot of athletes to understand. It's like, well, hey, I'm a starting tight end, and he's a starting tight end, and they do talk. So they're like, why is he getting paid more than I'm getting paid? I'm like, well, you're starting tight end for this team, and they're starting tight end for this team. They've been around a long way, about 5 Pro Bowls, and you're still just kind of coming up. Right? So don't miss your opportunity by inflating your worth or feeling like you're worth more than you are in the moment and letting those opportunities slide by you. Now, that also means don't underestimate your worth too. You need to know what your minimum number is that's worth your time and effort to go do this, because it is going to take some time and effort, and you should realize that. So there should be a minimum number. You're like, I'm willing to negotiate, but this is what I need to get in order to make it worth my time and money. So Nick, what are the other tips that you tell people as they're negotiating their worth?
Yeah, for sure. I think the key, like you said, is to kind of be open, especially when you're early in the endorsement sponsorship arena. I think there's no really way to price yourself if you haven't really done any endorsements yet. I think you need to build up kind of a roster of sponsorships that you've done in order to kind of benchmark yourself at a certain point. So I think by doing that, that's how you can kind of set maybe general guidelines around what you should do. But also you may be willing to take less for a brand that you really care about as well. And that might lead to longer term potential for you and that brand. But I think in the NIL space in general, there's a kind of skewed reality of what, you know, athletes are worth. I think there's tons of companies out there now that like price athletes at certain amounts. I just don't really buy that yet. I think to an extent, you're worth what someone's willing to pay you. So I think just looking at like a bunch of numbers online and basing yourself off that is kind of not the way to go about it. I think it matters on a case by case basis for you as the individual. And there's this concept in the NIL space called collectives, where boosters and donors and of universities are pulling together money and paying athletes with that money, essentially, in exchange for doing things. And a lot of the time, the amount of that compensation is much larger than they would be worth if they were sponsored by a brand. So it's also creating some misconceptions about what athletes should be getting when they're working with a brand. I think some athletes are losing deals because they got paid by a collective a certain amount and a brand offered less. when in reality, that's probably what they should have been paid. So I think that's important to call out as well. But one also point I would make that I think you said, Anne, is the investment part. We've seen a lot of athletes get deals because they have kind of put themselves out there and explained why they want to work with a certain brand. For 99% of athletes, brands aren't going to just approach you. You're going to have to be proactive a little bit about it. Reach out to brands yourself. Tell them why you want to, you know, work with them. Use their products. Explain why you love their products, et cetera. And that will lead to a lot more opportunities, I think, if you can naturally talk about how you use that brand and on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm hearing both of you say in this point is be realistic. And also play the long game. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a sports reference. Look at that. I'm never the sports reference one. But in any case, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about your reputation being associated in the course of this episode, quite frankly, but this is one where I can see it going sideways, especially if you feel like you should be making more based on your emotional opinion of what that is instead of what the market actually will bear. And I love the point about the collectives versus the brand, right? Because you could see that's a prime example of how things could start to skew or go sideways, or the expectations become bigger than what the opportunities actually are. And I think if you take a step back and you look at that logically, to me, on the outside, that makes perfect sense of why that would happen, right? That booster organization, that collective is very passionate about that university, that team, or that player. And so they're willing to support the player in a more one-off capacity because of that affiliation, instead of when you look at brands, that it's much more of a business approach, right? And I have believed watching this whole thing come to life around NILs that this is actually an opportunity, unfortunately, for brands to pay less than they typically would, or for new brands to enter the opportunity to even work with athletes, right? Because they can't afford the Olympic athletes, the pro athletes, all of that. So I think just honestly keeping your head on your shoulders and your ego in check and thinking about the reason that these brands are reaching out or these companies want you. And then also, I think it's just super smart to be proactive about it on your end, because I think if you go after those brands that you really love and you want to be a part of them, then it makes it a bigger opportunity for you, the athlete, to get something out of it that goes beyond just the financial exchange of things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I can tell you, I personally have picked athletes based on their interest with our brand, because, you know, to the point you were making before, Nick, it creates more of an authentic story. I have less that I have to be able to brief them and check their content and all that, because they already are showing an affection for the brand. And yes, it was Eventide. And yes, athletes like the brand, not just for the dollar signs behind it. It has some nostalgia value that they appreciate, and it gets your clothes clean. So there you go. But it also, just to the point you were making about even just doing some, it starts to build a credibility. And then you use the word reputation, April, which I think is right on, that when other businesses are shopping for athletes and they see that you've done other brands, even if you got paid by them or not, or you're doing it just to attract those brands, they start seeing you as more popular. It's like, oh, well, I see that they have done this. Now, technically speaking, you're supposed to disclose whether or not you got paid or not when you do these social posts. But, you know, if you didn't, you probably wouldn't have tagged that you got paid. And some people are not savvy enough to understand that or see that. So they would see that you, okay, well, then maybe they're getting these endorsement deals. Okay, they know what they're doing. They know how to do it. And, you know, maybe take a shot on them, you know. So do right by yourself and market yourself, I think, is a really good piece of advice. And don't just sit back and think that the brands are going to come to you, because there's a lot of athletes to choose from. Make it easy for them to choose you, I think, is the moral here.
Absolutely. You make a great point as well. And we see this all the time, is athletes will engage with a brand, post content about it on their social media, and then they're talking about how they want to take it down about a week later. But I don't think they realize that other brands coming on their social and seeing them working with, seeing the content that they create is quality, will actually could lead to more opportunities on their end.
Absolutely.
Yep. Good point.
And I can say that, yeah, firsthand, I can say that works. All right, so just to recap, four insider tips a college athlete should know to better negotiate an NIL deal. Get appropriately compensated for exclusivity. A brand will try to get as much exclusivity as they can for as little cost as possible. Do not give up exclusivity without considering the implications and being compensated appropriately. Second, be really good at creating branded content. Content is king will be the primary reason brands hire you. The better you are at creating content, especially content that weaves in brand messaging while still maintaining authenticity of tone, the more marketable you will be. Third, clarify usage rights and get the appropriate approvals from the team, university, and league. In most cases, the only NIL you have access to is yours, which means other deals may have to be negotiated if a brand wants you to be in your team's uniform, in front of university marks, or even for you to mention your team or your university. And finally, know your worth. This means doing your research and seeking the advice of people who know.
Still need help in growing your marketing smarts? Contact us through our website, forthright-people.com. We can help you become a savvier marketer through coaching or training you and your team or doing the work on your behalf. Please also help us grow the podcast by rating and reviewing on your player of choice and sharing with at least one person. Now, go show off your marketing smarts.